was no help in doing the right thing. Because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But it comes soon. And you must be smarter than your enemy.
What are you trying to say?
The Americans. They're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body is cold. You do it a million times. They never get it because the real solution always eludes them. That is, do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
And that's exactly what the people in this country, especially the white people, have done for a long, long time. In all the wars that we thought we won, we lost every one of them. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, here in the bunker on a Thursday. Friday. This is a Freya's Day. Hey, wait a minute. I got to get my lovey-dovey song on here for the she-wolves here before the show's done. Okay, this is December the 26th, the day after the Jew buyout day. That's what I call it. People going crazy, Brian. That present shit, I got that from the Jews, and I guess when the crazy guys came out there and said that they brought the presents to the baby Jesus in the manger. Yeah, and so they said, hey, that's a good idea, Jaime. We can make a fortune in our department stores that way. Get people into buying shit, you know. At least it used to be American shit. Now it's all over the world's crap that we're bringing in here and people going crazy. I don't even want to go out into the stores at all when it's close to Christmas. And even to the post office where people are hauling in there all these boxes sent all over the place. It's a bunch of bullshit, like George Carlin would say. Yeah. Well, let's get going. Let's get back to school. Yeah. Intermediate. Get your Doctor of Race mantle you can hang on the wall, because we're going back into the no man's land of Adolf Hitler. And reminds me, I got an email from a guy. He sends it out to, I guess, to a lot of people from the West Coast, and he was going on and sending all these pictures and calling Hitler Saint Hitler and all this stuff, and really into the Hitler worship thing. And it's unbelievable. I sent back to him and I said, well, do you realize that 55 million people died in World War II, and at least close to have that died in World War I? And the wars were started by white people. It wasn't the niggers in Africa that started the First and Second World War. It wasn't the chinks in World War I. You can say the Japanese did, but in World War II, but they had every reason to attack. And as far as Pearl Harbor is concerned, I'd want to give it back to the Hawaiians. Having a part of a state of our country thousands of miles out in the Pacific was insane. It was all money. all the pineapple business and all the goodies that they could get out of Hawaii and prepare these islands like aircraft carriers so they could go to war for the goodies of Asia. That's what it was about. Anyhow, I said, and Hitler had just as much, if not more, guilt than any of these other no-good Jew-loving leaders. And the reason I say that is because he attacked, you know. He started the war by attacking Poland. And so then it went from there. And that's because he had this love affair with the military-industrial complex of Germany. And he had really dumped National Socialism as a true National Socialist concept. He became a national capitalist, like most all the leaders end up doing. And if they happen to go another way and say they're communists, well, then all hell breaks loose and the capitalists have to spend billions smashing them instead of just say, well, okay, if you decided to go communist, that's your business, like Nicaragua or someplace like that. What the hell is it to the white working man whether a little country goes communist? They're not going communist, they're going socialist, and nothing upsets the capitalists like a country that's operating on socialism. Now they don't want to talk about Denmark much, and Sweden, and even with the invasion by a lot of non-whites, which is going to eventually cause them trouble. It's causing them trouble now, but according to the world ranking of highest productive and stable governments, which I just read the other day, Denmark's the top country in the world. But they have a quasi-socialist system, and Sweden does, England does, and we do. These Republicans that go on and on about socialism in the United States are full of shit. It is very much socialist already. And see, socialism's like anything else. It can be used for the good, or it can be used for the bad. And if you let the rats take over at the top, it don't make any difference what system it is. And that's what we got here. I'd like to see all these right-wing Christian conservatives that have in their head that this is not a socialist country. I'd like to see them drop off Social Security, Medicare, all these things. There's a whole lot of stuff in it, you know. Tennessee Valley, all that stuff. I mean, you know, it's all socialism. And a lot of it, there's nothing wrong with it as long as it's administered properly. But the capitalistas want to convince you that, oh, God, socialists might take over. Oh, boy. So here we go. Let's get back into what was Hitler doing back there in the 20s and the 30s. I'd like to know. Inquiring minds would like to know. Okay, let's go here. In 1919, after leaving the Communist Independent Socialist Party, Stryker was afraid of Jewish revenge. Fellow party members in Hamburg smiled pitifully at him when, upon arrival, he insisted on preparing coffee himself, as if the waiter in the dining caboose of the train wanted to poison him, and he could swear to this. The revenge came later, and it caught up with him in Nuremberg, where war criminals were hanged. And not, certainly not all the war criminals. There was a hell of a lot of more war criminals around the world that never got hanged. But he was strangled in 1946. Standing in front of 13 steps to the gallows, he yelled loudly, "Heil Hitler!" When he was questioned about his name, he answered brusquely, "You know it." The priests accompanied him up the stairs, and when on the top, he shrieked, "Purim Festival, 1946. Now it is time to go to God." Purim is the festival of joy after the slaughter of the Gentiles. In the surrounding dead silence, after a fall of his body through the trap door, a long groan was heard. The German observers called this execution the scariest of the night. Two German employees of the crematorium who helped in unloading of dead bodies pledged to keep this event secret. the box into which they put Stryker's body had the inscription, Abraham Goldberg, for he was indeed. When analyzing close relationships between Hitler's movement and Western Judaism, it is necessary to take a closer look at the latter would-be political successors of the Führer. When analyzing close relationships between Hitler's movement and Western Judaism, Rudolf Hess was born in Egypt to a mother with a British passport. This First World War pilot went to the University of Munich as a science assistant to Professor Hofhauser, a Catholic of Jewish origin, who specialized in a subject of national economy and was married to a Jewish lady. Hess and Hofhauser treated themselves as brothers of the Thule Society. Back then, Hess was the author of substantial precepts of the party. Section 1 said, quote, the party is anti-Jewish, unquote. Hofhauser belonged to a group of truth seekers led by a Levantine Jewish hybrid, George Ivanovich Gurdjieff, who operated in Georgian France and in the USA managed various sects and religious denominations. This specialist, who knew everybody and everything, made Haushofer and Hess studying occultistic doctrines of Tibet his friends. Already in 1903, Haushofer, together with Gurdjieff, traveled through the Himalayas, and later this Levantic sectarian moved for years to Tibet to educate the Dalai Lama. When Himmler and the Reich's leader of the SS found out that Hitler's physician, Professor Morell, gave the Führer syringes from Tibet, and that Morell knew both Haushofer and Gurdjieff very well, he sent out an expedition there into the impassable high mountains. They returned unexpectedly soon, but with a present from the Dalai Lama to his colleague Hitler. Inset one of the monasteries. Excuse me, boys and girls, I've done it again. Okay, let's get back to it. It was Haushofer who coined the slogans Lebensraum, or Lebensraum, meaning space for life, and the Kontinentaltron, the Continental Doctrine, both of which incited Hitler to battles in the Middle East and Eastern Europe. In 1933, son of Haushofer, also a professor of national economy, was assigned by the Führer to Rudolf Hess as his staff member. Most important missions around the world were entrusted to him. The senior Haushofer at that time received presidential post at the German Academy in Munich, and later was considered as the father of Hitler's pact with Japan. The Japanese never planned to attack Siberia, so almost none of Haushofer's teaching and prediction held ground. Just after the war was lost, he and his wife committed suicide. Among the Jewish ranks, Western Jews, known as Sephardim, stand higher above the others. The Ashkenazim, the emphasized word even says it clearly enough, as a merchandise store's found Tietz said in a book, quote, Jews in the German Economy, unquote, by Zellinger, Jew, Berlin, 1930. Quote, the Klan originally stems from Holland, probably even from southern France, unquote. After migration to the United States of North America, the Sephardim lodged a complaint about the rabble which threatened to flood the U.S. coast. Thus slandered Eastern Jews complained that because of their immigration they would be treated by the aristocratic Jews like criminals. I'll get that. This has a lot to do with the puzzle we're working on, the difference between the Western Jews and the Eastern Jews. It's a very strong part of the story. Professor Dr. Hans Gunther, specialized in racial science, accounted 90% of all Jews in the world to the Eastern Jews, and in his Information on Race of 1923, he came to this conclusion, quote, "Based on the observation, it is apparent that the dispersion of Jews among non-Jewish people causes endless commotion, which in effect escalates to hatred. Understanding of this phenomenon should be undertaken courageously by the Zionism itself. The Zionism should see it clearly that only the removal of Jews from the cohabitation with non-Jews will create dignified relations. Its establishment of an upstanding and appropriately secured homeland for the Jewish people in Palestine seems to be politically possible," unquote. Yeah, you hear that? Hitler kept himself preoccupied with this man, with his writings and doctrines. In 1935, at the National Party Day, Nuremberg Laws, on this party day, Hitler presented an award to this highly educated professor, Günther, and from that moment on, in the Third Reich, he was the highest authority on racial questions. Despite the importance of promoting him, idea of the honorary Aryan, remember that, honorary Aryan? For Hitler, it was not difficult to choose between two concepts, adaptation, as propagated by Tritschke, or the Palestine solution, as propagated by Günther. Well, Günther was his main man, so he must have bought into the Palestine solution. So as we go on, we're going to try to figure out now, how was he going to get these Jews into Palestine? Considering the awful consequences of a decision to become a politician, many would put such an occupation on a hanger, but not Hitler, who in a few days after a failed excursion was caught at the Field Marshal Hall, apprehended at the Hofstadel Villa. At that very moment, he asked for a pen and paper and wrote down, quote, "To everybody, do not fall into despair. Be united. Follow the temporary leaders truthfully and obeyingly, and serve your fatherland, but not its corruptors," written and signed by Adolf Hitler, unquote. It was already night, 1 hour by car from Munich, when the police delivered their prisoner to Fortress Landsberg on the River Lech, accommodating him well, said a policeman, and left. The guard shook and woke up the well-sheltered nobleman Arkau, who 4 years earlier, on an open street, shot to death the communist premier Eisner Kosmonautsky. Quote, "Come on, get up, the Führer is coming." The nobleman rubbed his eyes and recognized Hitler, stretched his hand out joyously. But Hitler did not reciprocate, as everybody knew that Arkau was of Jewish origin, and the newcomer wanted to be a politician, and from now on a legal one. The physician on duty, Dr. Breinsteiner, confirmed a head fracture of the humerus and diagnosed that a partial stiffness in Hitler's left shoulder would remain, but despite of this, he would be able to stand trial. For leadership over the trial fought the Social Democrat government in Berlin, as well as the Catholic Conservative central government in Munich. But in the end, the Bavarians succeeded. At the beginning of 24, the trial took place in the former dining hall of Munich's war school at Blückenbergstrasse. The failed rebel, using his big gob, dominated over the trial perfectly. He often needed hours to answer a question, and the audience listened and noticed each word. Representatives of the French, English, and American newspapers were present. Quote, "This Hitler, indeed, is a colossal guy," unquote, applauded one gentleman from the Court of Justice. "A dispute was about the criminal gang in Berlin," unquote. Everything went smoothly, and after 3 weeks, the gentleman defendant finished his discursive. Throughout the trial, nobody even mentioned the previous involvement of such gentlemen as Carr, von Lassau, and Seisser. All of them were acquitted. For Hitler, the judgment was lenient, with the prospect of probation. Ludendorff, who as the new commander-in-chief had already issued a few commands, also was exonerated, and this irritated him, unquote. I accepted this acquittal with shame, which my uniform and my medals do not deserve, unquote. In Landsberg, a man can serve time in a prison language called sitting on your ass. Guards and prisoners received the same provisions. Hitler had a living room, a bedroom, and an orderly to keep them clean. Well, I'll tell you, our POWs would sure like that. Also, the new arrivals condemned for rebellion got their best with refreshments such as Enzian or Steinhager beer. Hitler received books and entertained visitors. Among them were very active friends and fans with whom he sometimes conversed for hours without any intervention by the assisting guard, who at the end of each visitation had a problem with stopping Hitler's performances, unquote. When Rudolf Hess was sentenced in a separate trial, they moved this leader on the National Socialist Students Union into a quietly situated wing of the fortress where Hitler also lived. It was branded Field Marshal's Wing. Once and twice a week, Professor Haushofer, a Western Jew and a specialist in the field of national geopolitics, appeared there. Haushofer was Hess' friend and full of ideas. When he brought in a typewriter, the work began. Thus, the private secretary Hess typed what the big leader dictated, and two or three imprisoned partners attentively listened. At evening parties, he spoke in front of many other comrades, and it was an escape from daily boredom caused by playing ball in the courtyard or cards behind the table. On such occasions, the security guards also gathered outside the stairway hall and listened. Their mouths never released any disturbing sounds. In such a way, Mein Kampf was written and created. The speeches cannot be measured by an impression they make on the university professors, Hitler believed, but by the effect they made on the ordinary people. The Hitler's work of art, an important tool in achieving final victory, consisted of anti-Jewish lectures recited by the imprisoned party leader at the state expense in his high school education. In the index of Mein Kampf, the term Judaism appears 100 times, but such as France or Russia only a dozen times. And even there, the Jew is responsible. Quote, contamination by the Negro blood at the Rhine in the heart of Europe corresponds to the sadistic, perverted passion for vengeance by the sworn chauvinistic enemy of our people, as much as does the ice-cold thinking of a Jew, through whom began bastardization of Central Europe continent and deprivation of the white race of the foundation of self-glorifying existence through an infection with inferior humans. You remember France after World War One or during World One moved a lot of Negroes that they had recruited to fight World War One, and that's another story. I think you can get it. I watched part of it. It's called The Arabs in World War II or World War One. Maybe it was World War One. It's really an eye-opener of what was going on there in geopolitics with the Arabs in World War One. I think you can get that on, what's the name of that website? That Arab broadcasting outfit. What France led accordingly by the Jewish plan simulated by her own passions for revenge is doing today in Europe is a sin against existence of white humans, and someday will provoke all vengeance spirits of a race which recognized racial pollution as the original mankind's sin. And furthermore, the most terrible example offers Russia, where 30 million people, in a truly fanatic savagery or an inhuman torture, were killed or starved by the Jews, only to secure the Jewish literate men and the stock exchange bandits who wanted to gain power over the masses, unquote. Hitler, the Reich's chancellor and leader, later on admitted to his foreign minister that his big mistake was the contemplation about foreign politics which found space in Landsberg's work of art. It seems wrong to be talking about Mein Kampf as a far-reaching schedule of a world conqueror. Hitler wanted room in the east of Europe. The duty of our National Socialist mission is to bring German people to a political understanding that this mission's goal is not an intoxicated vision of a new Alexander the Great whose dreams are to be fulfilled, but it is more efficient work of the Jewish plow, which can be changed into the sword. Well, of course, he could have gotten all that in the East under peace and under the German-Soviet pact. He could have had all that without firing a shot. And with this, he finished, Germany, quote, Germany in the future, Europe, will only have two allies, England and Italy. Oh, boy. How wrong can you be? Today, we don't fight for the status of the world power, but for the existence of our fatherland, for the unity of our nation, and for the daily bread of our children. Today, Germany is not a world power. Even if a temporary impotence of our army would be overcome, we will have no pretense to such a title. However, the schedule provided Eastern Europe to the Germans after expulsion of Jews from the areas of their influence. The destiny, it seems, points us into a certain direction. By placing Russia into Bolshevik hands, a robbery was committed on the Russian nation and its intelligentsia, which until then brought about the guaranteed existence. To Germans, and by Germans-related England, the destiny provides an extended empire without mercy for the colonized people. Furthermore, hopes for a rebellion in Egypt are exactly miserable. The holy war to our German blockhead players can only give eerie feelings and nothing else. As a pure German who evaluates humanity on racial grounds, I am not allowed to link the destiny of my people with the destiny of, as they are so-called, the oppressed nations. Hitler did not understand until his last days that, led by him, Germany could not go into a ring with the Germanic brothers of England. Some other time, he asked a Swede, Mr. Dalaris, please explain to me why I could not even get into agreement with the English government. Because you seem to know England well, maybe you can solve this puzzle for me. When a few days later, in September 1939, Great Britain declared war on the German Reich, Hitler sat behind his desk motionlessly, staring far beyond. He didn't fall into a rage yet. He was just sitting totally still, and after a while, which seemed to him to be eternal, he asked, quote, now what? He didn't seem to understand the control of the Jews on England, and he had this worship of the English Empire, I guess mostly because of its power. But he didn't seem to understand that England was totally permeated and all the way to the top with Jews. Back in 24, to the comrades imprisoned at Landsberg, everything looked very simple. Germany will acquire Eastern Europe and the Germanic England, the whole world. The Allied Italy will change the Mediterranean Sea into her Mare Nostrum. America is far away and eventually will become a heaven for the godless people. Well, maybe that would have been a good thing, because to worship their Jewish God has gotten us in a lot of trouble. Most of his believers were strict Catholics, from whom he knew about the letters of Apostle Paul, the mythical Jew Apostle Paul. Quote, God does not love Jews, for they are despised by everybody, unquote. Which that was written by a regular human being. It certainly didn't come from any great Jewish Paul, who you can't find. You can see all the things he supposedly said, but if you'll trace him down, there's nothing there. But he pretty well had to do with turning Christianity into more like Paulism, that's for sure. Hence, the Landsberg orator could easily play a game against the Jews under an excuse of continuing God's work. Now, don't people do that all the time? I mean, you know, look at the Muslims do the same thing. I mean, you know, the leaders of Japan did the same thing. It's always good to link yourself up with this God. The hatred of his real and presumed Jewish relatives, acquired by Hitler during his Vienna days, was enhanced by teachings of Schonauer, Luger, and Lanz von Liebenfels. Landsberg's lectures on theories of racial exponents like Darwin, Mendel, Bolshe, Gobineau, and Gunther were complemented by periodic visits of Haushofer and Rosenberg, with their land expropriative tendencies forwarded from the Jewish kibbutzim, people's commissars who ruled the Soviet Russia and tore it down to pieces. Yeah. Rosenberg seemed to be more into this idea of just conquering in the East everybody, you know, and replacing it with Germans. Hofhauser, supported by his assistant Rudolf Hess, the Egyptian, reached out very far and from all sides and grasped strongly his pliers and already huge Reich. The Rosenberg, born in Estonia, according to his passport, only a few months a German citizen, knew a lot about seizure of power by the Jews in Russia. He fled with white Russians to Paris and pretty soon found refuge in Munich, where he wrote about what was going on in the Soviet Union. Now, it's interesting that Hitler was an Austrian and Rosenberg was from Estonia and so forth. It's amazing how guys who weren't citizens of the country were so quickly obtained power. Well, I guess we see it now. There's a whole lot of people from all over the world that have been kicked out of their countries or deposed, come here, and they get right in. If not in the government, they get into the universities. And look at Gorbachev, who fucked up Russia. He's now a professor over in the East Coast, living the good life. The Russo-Jewish Revolution, the Jewish question, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, and the Jewish world politics were the best sellers. Rosenberg, through the Jew Pinkelus, and as a manager of the People's Observer, had access to finances and knew what Hitler presumed about his distant Jewish origin, which was obvious due to his name. However, after he described to his Führer, with Meyer's dictionary at his hand, how in 1492 Torquemada, a converted Jew, as the Spanish Grand Inquisitor, rid Spain of almost all Jews, baptized ones notwithstanding, then it was certain that during Hitler's imprisonment, nothing would stay in Rosenberg's way to a career as a representative of the leader. He was a very freely expressive ideologist who could show to others the Führer's written bequest, quote, "My beloved Rosenberg, and from now on you will lead the movement." It would be too cumbersome to list all acts which, according to Mein Kampf, the Jews have committed or would commit in the future. Hitler pleasantly characterized them as a tuberculosis bacteria or as pests, because so many things in Hitler's work are described in detail as well as they are widely known and correct. In 1945, the conquerors prohibited Germans from reading it, and the prohibition became the law of the land. The ensuing generations, inset up till 1974, for this reason cannot form any opinion on the subject matter, through though they should. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff that's been kept quiet on all sides on this. You see, everybody, what I'm driving at here is that there's a hell of a lot that was not known by enough people on all sides. Incidentally, I watched a film last night. I watched it before. It's called Europa, and it talks about the werewolves that kept on fighting after capitulation in 1945, and they were kicking some pretty big ass over there, derailing trains and everything else. They don't talk about that much either. And I think that there's a time going to come when this lone wolf is going to become werewolf. And when that day comes, Katie barred the door shut. There's a man under the bed. For the purpose of general education, it is proper to point out that hardly any people of this world have self-preservation drive so strongly developed as the so-called chosen ones. The best evidence for this is the existence of these people throughout the millennia. To make a distinction between good things and bad, it should be added that if the Jews, with the help of their Marxist beliefs, win over people of this world, then their crown will be a death wreath for humanity, and this planet will be pulled through the ether with no one present, like a million years ago. It cannot be doubted that Hitler promised the Jews banishment, and in case of war, their destruction, and that he relied on wars just like any other realistic politician. Quote, if 12,000 or 15,000 Hebrew criminals were gassed at the beginning of 1914, and during the war, like the 100,000 of our best German workers were on the battlefields, the sacrifice of millions would not have been wasted, he said. Hitler's idea that he was sent by the Almighty, who by prolongation of the Second World War was guilty of millions of victims, was also expressed in Mein Kampf. Quote, I do believe I am acting in the interest of the Creator. By fighting against the Jews, I'm doing this at the will of God. Doesn't everybody? Hitler's work of art is divided into two volumes, excuses by his opponents and by his fans that they did not read it are fishy. Politicians on both sides picked from it whatever they needed. Radio stations broadcasted its contents vehemently. Schools, evening meetings with the Hitler Youth and the SA and the SS in attendance were impossible without citations of Mein Kampf. Since 1933, the district attorneys and judges followed the guidelines of Mein Kampf without any reservations whatsoever, and trivially interpreted such terms as a citizen versus a subject. Even the little ones started their readings about Hitler's movement through the fabled books which the parents received at their wedding from the marriage register's office. A favorite saying, which on the Monday mornings was put on display and tendered in the halls of each faculty by the local party leaders, taught, quote, every man has his best advisors standing by, but a decision is made by one, unquote. The second volume could not be finished in Landsberg due to the premature release of the prisoner home. This release created damage which was soon removed by the prohibition of Hitler's speeches after his first performance in freedom. The prohibition lasted 2 years. During that time, an accounting sergeant and business leader of the party, Max Amon, was typing everything what his employer in his villa on the Obersalzberg had dictated. For both, it was the work of their lives. It was the mind struggle, which in Germany was printed in 10 million copies and translated into many languages of the world, including Russian and Chinese, and brought to the author a flat 15 million marks, from which, until his violent death, he used up only half. I believe that Max Amon was a Jew, or part Jew. Whoever wants to do research on the cause of the outbreak of Second World War, it is advised to consider a fortune-telling caricature printed at the conclusion of the Versailles Peace Treaty in the Daily Herald newspaper. It showed two main perpetrators, U.S. President Wilson and the French Premier Clemenceau, leaving a marble building and behind one of its columns European baby standing naked crying above the child's head is seen in the inscription. 1940 class, 1940 to arms. President of the Federal Republic of Germany, Theodor Huss, must have had similar feelings when in 1932 he wrote, quote, the birthplace of National Socialist Movement was not Munich, but Versailles. Hitler was in the fortress of Landsberg. The leadership of the party was not sized by the theorist Rosenberg, the coffee ant alias, the gossiper of the party, but by militant Ludendorff. His main theme was the slanderous dictate of Versailles, and in May 1924, for his National Socialist Freedom Movement candidates, during the election to Parliament in May 1924, voted about 2 million Germans, encouraged and stimulated by his wife, a neurology a physician. Ludendorff switched to another theme, which he did not leave until the end of his days. It was, quote, the Rome and its struggle against coal and steel extremism, unquote. And all that happened in Bavaria, everything was rotting. In the beginning of 1925, the first significant move Hitler made after his discharge from Landsberg Fortress was a courtesy visit to the Bavarian Prime Minister, Held. This Catholic politician was glad to hear, quote, Your Excellency, the act of November 9th was my mistake. From now on, I will help to strengthen the authority of the state. We are united in the fight against Marxism. And how about Ludendorff's struggle against the church? I will put it straight. I have nothing to do with Ludendorff. No more. With his Held was overjoyed. The beast has been tamed. The second significant move was the following visit to Ludendorff and its outcome. What are your North German gentlemen talking about? Hitler wanted to know. Is the danger of extreme mining greater than the Jewish danger? Who are these ignorants in the North? In other words, these Strassers must have been more into the green idea, conservation. Who are these ignorants in the North? These Monsieur Wool and von Graff to build up my movement. I need Catholics of Bavaria as well as Protestants from Prussia. At this dictum, Ludendorff tried to counter-argue, but he got a reprieve. Don't hit me with the cassocks of women and priests, retorted Hitler without clicking his heels, and that is how the two marchers of November 9th parted. 2 weeks after this clarification, Hitler called his most trusted men to the starting point of the November riot, the Citizens' Brewery Cellar. Oh, that's a good place. 4,000 men came and, in an overfilled assembly hall, listened to him. That's a lot of people, 4,000 people. When's last time we had a right-wing leader in this country that brought in those kind of people, that many people? Quote, I will lead the movement myself, he declared. No one will dictate to me. During the 2 hours of the Führer's argumentation, people climbed on tables, hugged each other, screamed until they were hoarse. The son of the people, believing that he has been lost, has returned. After the renewal of the party, the tame beast struck the prohibition of his speech in Bavaria. And soon the same followed in most of the other German regions. In 1928, the last region which lifted the prohibition was Prussia. Because the German economy was improved, it was not good for Hitler. Out of 3 million unemployed in 1923, thanks to foreign credits, 2.5 million people had jobs. However, Hitler didn't get confused. His instinct guided him correctly, and he shared this with his cadres. Quote, my dear party members, this is a short-lived prosperity. Exploitation of the Germans by a flood of Eastern Jews, remember that, Eastern Jews, into our country is caused by the Versailles Treaty and is levying contributions which, without any doubt, will plunge all the circles of our society into economic misery. But through that, we will get the power. Just wait. In other words, hoping for a depression so we could take power. We've heard that before, huh? Don't we look for a collapse? A collapse doesn't guarantee anything. After that, Hitler took a creative leave of absence and spent 4 years in Berchtesgaden. Well, that's a nice deal. That was a nice place, Berchtesgaden, up there, sitting on the veranda looking at the mountains, drinking beer. In 1929, the expected misery came almost overnight, and it was started by the Black Friday on Wall Street of New York. Well, of course, that was set up by Jew bankers and Christian bankers, Aryan bankers. They were all of them in on it. In fact, I remember Dr. Stuart Crane talking about that in his Proofs of Conspiracy. The very day of the crash in New York City, it turned out that Churchill had come on a visit and was in the Wall Street building there, and when the crash came, they wanted to give Churchill a message. We can bring anybody down. Then, in the breathtaking advances during the next 4 years, Hitler conquered first the state chancellery and then the parliament, and soon afterwards the presidential chair and the armed forces, and thus an unlimited power over the whole state, the German Reich. That's what many leaders use, is catapults them into leadership, is to destroy, either benefit by the destruction of the economy or cause it. The orator of the masses, who once was sentenced to silence, assigned the party work in North Germany to the land custodian, former Jesuit student and druggist Gregor Strasser, for he had a lot to do with the organizing the party. Pretty soon he founded a party within a party. Quote, working division of the Northwestern German district governor of the NSDAP, unquote. Especially in Ruhr Basin Valley, the people gathered under the swastika flag. There the people awoke politically, because in 1923 France entered the basin under a pretext of providing telegraph poles, which were missing during the delivery. The loudest one in the basin was Strasser's secretary, Dr. Joseph Goebbels. As a party member, this young man urged Hitler, living comfortably in southern Germany, to render more peaceful actions. Quote, I demand exclusion of the petty bourgeois, Adolf Hitler, from the NSDAP. And Strasser was happy. Hitler handled this storm in a glass of water with an easy hand. He called a party conference to Bamberg. But most of the northern Germans had neither the time nor the money for a long journey, so they didn't attend. Hitler explained everything to his people and thus convinced them. Almost all the southern Germans who came to support him defeated Goebbels, noted in his diaries as follows, quote, O Lord, how little we have in common with those pigs down here, down there. My inner stability has been shaken hard, and I am only half a person. 2 weeks later, after Hitler guided kindly the unstable man Jupp Goebbels around Munich, he was a full person again, and his scrupulously kept diary showed this. Yeah, that's a really interesting part of the struggle, where Goebbels was wanting to get rid of Hitler, siding with these other people and the Strassers. And then all of a sudden Hitler romanced him, and he looked into his beautiful blue eyes and changed his mind. I love him. I bow to this great one, to this political genius. We get out to eat and drink with enthusiasm, unquote. Gregor Strasser could never forget the chameleonic posture of this man from the Rhine. But Hitler applied the Roman rule, divide and govern, sent them both to Berlin, where they could quarrel conclusively. This move commenced a racial struggle within the NSDAP. It is obvious that this anti-Jewish spokesman of Germany, with his nativity odium, surrounded himself with men who could show just as little as he could about the favorable evidence of their Aryan shining cleanliness. The chief was not bothered with this by his followers, and had needed peace, particularly from the Jewish-managed news media. which could not touch this sensitive subject in fear of getting their own throat cut, at least for a while. He thought that the Jewish half-breeds are more intelligent and more willing to cooperate. But Goebbels started a battle, and the Jewish grandmother of Heinrich Himmler, who was an Italian fruit stand merchant, was drawn into it. In this way, the competitive enterprise of the Stormtroopers SS, which Himmler was about to build up, was threatened with damage. Rosenberg, who appeared at the moment, intervened and stumbled upon Goebbels' past, who in school was called a rabbi, and whose ancestors could be found among Holland's earlier Spanish Jews. The party theorist from Estonia, Rosenberg, also made reference to Goebbels' Jewish professor Gundelfinger, who graduated him from Heidelberg, and softly added, quote, "The entire propaganda of Goebbels is, of course, Levantic. The question of racial origin makes Goebbels' position difficult, and I believe that we all should understand this situation," unquote. You know, ever since I was a kid and saw Goebbels' picture, I always had suspicions that he was he didn't look very Aryan to me. These high waves were leveled even more by another advisor of Hitler, a young lawyer from Munich, Hans Frank, at this time and on the arbitration board, whose Jewish father was converted from Mosium to Roman Catholicism in Bamberg. Ever since the end of the 20s, the party discipline ruled in matters of origin, and old Luger's saying shined in its newel form. Quote, "I will decide who is a Jew," unquote. Thus the term honorary Aryan has been invented. All this didn't point to an upward movement. At the parliamentary elections of 28, the National Socialists received less than 1 million of the 40 million votes, i.e., not even half the amount they had gotten 4 years earlier under Ludendorff. In the hot summer of 1929, all these quiet times, which created opportunities for all kinds of personal teasing stemming from ancestral entanglements, came to an end, mainly because of the plan by a certain Owen D. Young, from the chosen of by God, from the United States of America. He contributed to the German youth a burdening 110 billion marks, which had to be repaid within the next 59 years. Mr. Young, this is like this guy down in Texas, this preacher. He's got all this money. This guy must have been a cult religious leader chosen by God, I'm not sure. Mr. Young, thinking in the category of U.S. dollars, this amount seemed to be manageable. This brilliant economic scientist did not mind that German workers in those days brought home only 11 marks per week in unemployment benefits. The young generation, which did not start the First World War, had to pay for it with hunger, eating only turnips, and thus flocking in great numbers into the SA. This is what's happened in Germany after World War II, but it went the wrong way. Nothing was more natural. They came because Hitler beat the drum loudest at the Reichskomitee for German plebiscite, in unison with the German National People's Party of Alfred Hugenberg, combating the Young Plan for reparations payment. A draft law against slavery of the German people was issued, and states started with this logical explanation. Quote, "The Reich's government, in a solemn form, has to let the foreign powers know that the enforcement of war reparations by the Versailles Treaty stands in contradiction to the historical truth." While 4 million hard-working and overburdened people were signing the draft, the New York stock market crashed on the famous Black Friday on October 29. About the time a younger broker on the Wall Street, Curtis B. Dahl, Roosevelt's son-in-law, I met Curtis B. Dahl, and I liked him. He was a nice guy, right-wing conservative type. He was in his late 70s, maybe early 80s when I met him. He was paraded around by Willis Carto. Anyhow, son-in-law of Roosevelt, for decades later, explained how this could have happened. the crash resulted from a greed for money. Well, of course it did. This operation was performed with recklessness, without any talent and energy. The destruction was monstrous. Actually, speculation of the drop in prices is not wrong, provided no criminal tactic is being used. In my opinion, Ben's tactics weren't far from it. Until then, I did not know that the greatest and fastest profit flows to the powerful bankers and creditors when they sell shortly before the crash they created, unquote. After a few days, I've got several books on this 29 crash in my library. I mean, they can pull a crash anytime they want out of their pocket. After a few days, the deeply indebted Germans felt what just had happened. The suicide rate increased sharply, and all of a sudden, the masses of unemployed people or part-time workers stood idle on the streets. These 4.5 million people who were willing to work got together to discuss what is happening. Then they turned either left to the communists or right to the National Socialism. The Social Democrat, that's not much of a choice, was it? Yeah. The Social Democratic government of the state, called by Hitler carrying out of government, disappeared without a sound, and then on the political stage appearing Brüning, a politician of the Catholic Center. He instantly started a game with emergency regulations but got no applause. That's like these, what are they, you know, trying to get all the countries to pull in their belts and all that, you know. And their workers are out in the streets. They seem bullshit. The unemployed mused and they mediated in their workplaces or in the stormtroopers' meeting halls, by mistake entering a wrong bar or by mere choice joined this or that movement in the game of life or death. The communist and the National Socialist combat troops counted over 100 dead and 10,000 injured in their ranks. You see, the Hollywood Nazis, they always show these, you know, well-dressed, uniformed National Socialist troops marching down the street, flowers being thrown at them and everything, but they never talk about the bad old days when 100 dead and 10,000 injured in fighting in the streets. Sort of tells you something about these Hollywood Nazis. Almost a civil war swept the country with turmoil. In the assembly halls, rocks, cudgels, chairs, and beer mugs were the main weapons. Nothing counted except a political conviction. The author remembers as he assisted home a new friend from school, quote, "What is your father doing out there?" unquote. Ask him my worried mother. Quote, "He plays a communist," unquote. The response came out proudly from his six-year-old chest. People were hungry. The lines in front of the employment offices grew. Policemen on horses hit people's heads who yelled, "Bread, bread." When a man had to choose between freedom and bread, he chose bread, especially when he had a family or wanted to establish one. This is how Hitler won the crowd. The SA troops were made up of desperate teenagers mustered to obey orders, who wanted to be patriots and to find in bars and restaurants a bowl of soup and eventually a friendly climate to stay in. In due course, the stormtroopers constructed barrack-like housing for themselves. Göring returned from Swedish exile. Rome returned from Bolivia and took over the leadership of the SA. And after a while, a few hundred thousand men followed his commands. Quote, "When Hitler orders to be at a victory gate at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, then we will be there," Rome thundered. "All of that cost money, and the money came from people you would least expect," said the Reich Chancellor Brüning. Hitler, in the struggle against Eastern Jews, was supported financially then, as in the following years, by New York Western Jews, who up to this day don't permit a burial of Eastern Jews in their cemeteries, even if they lived in New York through the three generations. We're getting there, boys and girls. "I never talked about this in public," Brüning wrote his friend Dr. Petchel. "But in the interest of Germany, it might be necessary to reveal how the same bankers in the fall of 1930 search for ways to influence American Ambassador Sackett against my government in favor of the Nazi Party. Bruning, even much later, never talked about this publicity, although he was a professor in some university, U.S. university. Another guy that leaves his country to get out of the mess, and then he gets a job in a U.S. university to lecture. Early enough in the 20s, Mr. Warburg of the Bank of Hamburg advised the Reich's Premier Ebert to stop the migration of Jews from the East. What? Jews against Jews? I can't believe it. When a Wall Street messenger who was about to bring money to Hitler asked Warburg for an opinion, he laughed at them. Quote, Hitler is a strong man and Germany needs him. By the Jews, Hitler means the Galician Jews who pollute Germany since the war began. The Jews of pure German origin he acknowledged and threats as equals. Wait a minute. Hitler said Jews of pure German origin he acknowledged and treats them as equals. I haven't heard any of these right-wingers talking about that. These Eastern Jews influence the Social Democratic Party and the Communist Party. We will get rid of them for sure. Not because they are Jews, but because they are communists and social democrats. Right. Okay, we'll end there. We're getting into some heavy shit here, man. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Saturn's Day. I may even do more of this tomorrow instead of putting on Sling Blade, but we'll see, okay? You're starting to see this thing about Eastern Jews, the seedy-looking ones, and the Western Jews, who he respects as pure German origin. So then why would... Then now the next step is trying to figure out now, why would he export all of these Western Jews, German Jews, towards the East and house them in some concentration camps? Or was he moving the best of the Jews, the Western Jews, in the deal with the Zionists to move them to Israel, Palestine? In other words, to continue to build up Israel, Israeli-Palestine. Was it all the plan? I'm beginning to think so. And all this shit about all these millions of Jews dying is nothing but a con. That's to cover up what they were really doing. And they were willing, the Zionists and all of them, they were willing to sacrifice all the Eastern Jews. These Western Jews hated their guts. Be with you tomorrow. Beginning to believe that the war was a secondary proposition that Hitler just sort of bumbled himself into, attuned with the major industrialists of both the West and the East. And he just got into it, into this bog or quicksand, and he didn't know any way to get out of it besides just killing everybody, marching east, bomb them, get the tanks on them. And so I got some hell already. Of course, I continue to get hell because that's my job, the sin eater from the Hollywood Nazis and some of the Hollywood Nazi theoreticians who go on and on about Saint Hitler and all that kind of stuff. They don't look beneath the tablecloth. So I sent back to him this note this morning. I said, Hitler fell right into the Jewish trap, which pretty much gave the top Zionists the keys to the world by the way of Israel / USA money control. Hitler's great love and admiration for the Jew-saturated Britain inhibited his ability to defeat Britain. Then his miserable decision at Dunkirk not to take the entire British expeditionary force into captivity or kill them, strike two, by the time the German industrialists had overthrown National Socialism and sweet-talked Hitler into the Russian insanity, the defeat was guaranteed. As the industrialists romanced Hitler for a bigger and bigger military, and Morell, Hitler's doctor, pumped him full of meth and other drugs, which creates extreme paranoia, he was prepared for total defeat. One more blunder was the insanity of wasting 1 million troops. Just think of that, 1 million good white German troops sacrificed at Leningrad, just out of Hitler's mindset, which delayed the taking of Moscow. Yeah, and there's a lot more reasons, you know. When you read that about that in itself, a million white men dying in the snows of Russia just for the fetish of Adolf Hitler to take Leningrad, and a million men on the other side, and a good share of them were white, died too. And if there was no reason to take, no big deal to take Leningrad. There was nothing that important in Leningrad. He could have been in Moscow a month earlier and taken Moscow, no problem. So ask yourself these kind of questions. I'll tell you, most people haven't gotten the answers, and they don't get it from the right wing, I'll tell you that. The Hitler lovers don't have the answers.